Welcome to Season 3 of the Sober Motivation Podcast. Join me, Brad, each week as my guests and I share incredible, inspiring, and powerful sobriety stories. We are here to show sobriety as possible, one story at a time. Let's go! Welcome back to another episode of the Sober Motivation Podcast. Today we've got Dave with us. Dave, how are you?
I'm doing well, man. Thank you for having me.
Of course. Thank you for jumping on the show and being willing to share your story with all of us.
No doubt, for sure.
So what was it like for you growing up?
The beginning stages of my life were pretty interesting. I was born into addiction. Both my parents were drug addicts and alcoholic. I lived with them probably for only 3 years of my life. And then I spent the rest of my time bouncing around family members. I was given up to my family. Luckily for me, I wasn't given up for adoption or anything. So I was able to stay within my family. But that early start was pretty rough. The first few years after not living with my parents, I was living in a house with drug addicts that accompanied a lot of abuse, whether it be verbal abuse or physical abuse. You know, I remember waking up in the morning and like having to walk over people who had passed out the night before. And I was only, I think, kindergarten or first grade at the time. So it was a lot of just taking care of myself, having to grow up quick. And I think in hindsight, I thought that would be the factor that would steer me away for using any sort of drugs or alcohol, when in fact, I think it ended up being one of the main reasons why I ended up using, was to try to escape all those memories.
Yeah. Wow, yeah. Man. So things started for you fast. And where were you born at?
I was born and raised in San Diego, California. I lived there for about 18 years with different family members. Eventually, I ended up into a good home, but I think at that point, the traumatic experiences that had already happened had already settled in and started to take its toll on me without me even realizing it in that moment.
Yeah. How did your school life look for you early on?
It's funny because when I was younger and I was living in a household without structure, I tended to do better in school, I think, because that's where I found positivity. And then when I found myself in a home that was loving and caring, I fell off from school. So I didn't really push myself. And it was also odd because I would excel at things like math and science, but yet fail like the easy classes like food or PE. You know what I mean? I just wouldn't apply myself there for whatever reason. I was a roamer type, which is fitting because I was a roamer by nature, by being given up by my family. So I wasn't really a part of any like certain clique. I just had three good friends and we just roamed around the school, co-mingled with everybody. We were, you know, skater punks, potheads. Didn't think I would ever fall into that category. Like I said, I didn't think I would ever use any sort of drugs or alcohol. And then I did.
Yeah. It's interesting too, with the way that things were when you were born and those experiences. I mean, at what time did you realize that the way it was for you was maybe different than some of your peers? You know what I mean? The way you were being raised or you were coming up in the world.
Oh, yeah. I mean, a lot of that was just seeing like my friends' families who had both parents and seemingly happy homes. You know, I don't really know what their homes were like behind closed doors. Some of my friends, my close friend, came from divorced homes, which was similar, being raised by single moms for the most part. But mine was different because I was being raised by my great aunt. So, you know, my friends would come over and I would be calling her my aunt rather than my mom. At the time back then, I didn't refer to her as mom. Now I do refer to her as mom. But so it was definitely different, you know, and hearing people talk about their dads and moms. And I didn't really have that growing up. I didn't have that sort of structure. So it definitely felt different. I think in hindsight now, in this exact moment of you asking me the question, I can have the feeling of almost like loss, I guess. I didn't have that. What was that like for people, you know? And it was something that I always wanted to give to my kids, was to be a good parent. Something like I longed for to do.
Yeah. So where do you go as you venture through school, and when do you get some stability in the household? Like, when does that start for you?
Yeah, so I would say probably around fifth grade, sixth grade, I ended up in a good home being raised by my great aunt. And that was a blessing. You know, she had already raised her kids. She didn't really have to take me in. She had two daughters and a son. Two out of the three of those kids also struggled with addiction, and she had already had her hands full and did her part, you know, so she didn't really have to take me in. I just got lucky. My cousin ended up seeing me in the home that was full of drugs and had went to her and said, hey, I think we need to help him. And they ended up taking me in, and that was awesome. I went from like the dirty grime household to, in my world, it was a mansion, when really, you know, I didn't live in a mansion. I lived in apartments, but it was way better than what I had came from. And there was love, but, you know, I didn't really know, I think, younger, how to accept that love, because I wasn't used to it. I spend a lot of my time now trying to tell my mom how much I appreciate what she did for me and how much I love her, because back then, I think I took it for granted. You know, I was a punk kid, and she always says I was a good kid, but I know reality. Like, I was out roaming around making all kinds of trouble, you know. So it was hard for me to accept. And I think part of the reason why I fell into drinking so much was because I wouldn't allow myself to let any sort of happiness in. I just didn't think I was deserving of it. Like, why would I be deserving? My own parents didn't want me, you know? Like, what makes me able to be happy? And so that's where a lot of the comfort from drinking came in, because I could numb all those emotions and felt this is what I'm destined to be. My parents are this, so I'm going to be this, you know?
Yeah. It's so interesting, right? Because it's a common trend, I think, and a lot of stories I've heard here on the podcast is you grow up with one example, and then it's like, oh, you know, this is never going to be my life. And then later down the road, we find out that's the path that we're on as well, in one way or another. I mean, shaped a lot differently in our own way, but yeah, it's that thing. And I can only imagine how that would play out, right, with your parents, and you feel like that rejection so early on with that, with your parents, and then maybe seeing that through friends and through other people, how they're, you know, connecting as a family and, you know, just longing for something like that. And like you mentioned too, for you being a parent, it was like, okay, you know, I want to do this differently. Did you ever talk with your folks throughout all of this, like up to high school or these years?
Yeah, my biological parents?
Yeah.
So when I was 16, my dad ended up tracking me down. And at that point in time, he was sober. He had then got sober and wanted to reconnect. At that time, I didn't want anything to do with him. You know, like I was like, nah, I don't really want a part of that. When I turned 18, I was living in the Bay Area, and my drinking had, or sorry, back then it was more of my drug use than it was my drinking. I had dabbled with hallucinogens, cocaine, you know, you name it, I was doing it. And that was escalating, and I was getting drunk in public and just making poor choices. So I needed to get out of California, and my dad lives here in Missouri. So I reached out to him, and he offered me a bus ticket to come out and stay with him. So at the time, I thought he was sober. And when I got here, at that point, I was 20 years old. And when I got here in Missouri, he was not sober. And I ended up living inside of a house that of everything I was trying to get away from, you know, everything I was trying to escape, which made it super difficult. So we didn't really have a great bond. It was more like two buddies, you know, getting hammered together was what it was. My biological mom, I didn't really get in contact with her until probably heard from her little bits and pieces of her, but to actually talk to her and connect with her was until I was probably in my 30s. And she's sober, not doing great. She's, you know, she's done a lot of damage to her body, but she's sober. So that's a blessing. But my dad now has since been 20 years sober, and he lives to me, and we now have a better relationship. You know, it's not a complete father-son relationship, but it's something we're working on and getting better at. And definitely he's somebody I leaned on when I went to rehab. And you know, he's got a lot of years under his belt and done a lot of work. So.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. That's incredible. Wow. 20 years. Yeah. So going back in the story a little bit too, like when did the partying, the drugs, the drinking and all of that start for you?
I had my first drink when I was 16. I went all in. I did 13 shots of gin pretty much back to back. And you would think that would be enough to deter me from drinking again. It was a lot. But it didn't, because once it hit me and once I had that feeling of, oh man, I don't really have to think about anything. I just numbed all these thoughts. It became something that I clinged on to. And I didn't really see that coming. You know, it didn't really escalate till I was 20 and I had moved out of my house and was living in the Bay Area. And at that point, I found liquor stores that would sell it to me. They wouldn't ID me. And it was just game on from there. You know, a lot of everyday drinking, all day drinking. And then, you know, like I said, I ended up moving to Missouri and the pattern just continued for quite some time. You know, I'd say for at least 20 to 22 years of pretty consistent, almost everyday drinking.
Yeah. Yeah. So 22 years. So when you're, what do you do after high school? Do you get a job or anything after high school?
Yeah. You know, I worked at Blockbuster, little jobs, never had much of a career until I was in Missouri. I got a job at Trader Joe's 17 years ago. I started at Trader Joe's, which was cool because that kind of sent me on a career path because I'm a manager there now and it gave me the career I needed. But all these, you know, positives and jobs that I had were also giving me the excuse that as long as I was holding down a job, I don't have a drinking problem, right? If I'm getting up and going to work and I don't have a problem, I'm quote unquote functioning. A word I shy away from because I feel like saying functioning addict gives you the excuse, you know, when you're in that moment. But for all purposes, I was functioning as far as keeping a job and everything. And just gave me the excuse to keep going, you know, paid my bills and all that.
Yeah. And so when you first start out, when did you notice things progressing? Or was it always like when you hit that 20-ish range, like it was just daily? Or were you experiencing any consequences early on from drinking?
Yeah. When I was 20, that was a big year for me, I think. You know, in hindsight, looking back to realize that there was a problem, I was very emotional. You know, a lot of the emotions from my childhood were coming out. A lot of those traumas that I didn't know how to process, I would get really angry or I'd be really sad and you know, get drunk and start crying and I'd want to hit things and I'd get arrested for being drunk in public. You know, I think I got arrested probably 6 times in a year for drunk in public. They knew me by name. Police officers. I couldn't quite understand why. Back then, I couldn't really name what was going on. I was just that guy that was getting drunk and would be super emotional and just didn't know how to handle it all. I think at one point back then, I took like a 6-month hiatus from drinking and thought that I quote unquote fixed myself, I guess you could say, and, you know, went right back in on it again, especially when I moved here into Missouri at the end of that year. It really escalated more.
Yeah. Did you ever, throughout all of this, even when you were younger, was there any type of intervention or counseling or any type of support offered to you?
No, nobody, you know, throughout all my drinking, there would be like, maybe people would say subtle things like, maybe you should take a break or something like that. But like, I was never pressed. I didn't go to counseling until I was probably maybe even 40. I may have went when I was 40, I think. I never wanted to go to counseling. I didn't want to admit that I needed it. I didn't think it was for me. I would try to tell myself all the time, I'm okay with the past, you know, that made me who I am today. I'm fine with it. I'm totally fine. You know, there was never an intervention. I was, you know, at some point I ended up having 2 kids and I was married and, you know, it was another instance of me functioning because I was holding a job down and I had a family and a house and all these things, you know. I would have fleeting moments of maybe I should stop, and I would have fleeting bits of time where I would stop, but I wouldn't call it like sober time. It was just me stopping, you know, like hitting a reset button basically, but nothing substantial.
Yeah. Some people refer to that as like maybe a punishment for themselves too, right? Like I can't handle it. So this is what I need to do, but not necessarily looking at, you know, the entire picture here about why is it that I enjoy, or maybe not even enjoy drinking at that point, but why do I keep going back to something that's causing so much damage in a sense?
Yeah, like putting yourself in timeout or something, you know? Yeah, go sit in the corner for a month and then go back at it.
Yeah.
Yeah, totally. You know, I think it's harder too when you're in your 20s because you're telling yourself like, that's what everybody's doing, right? I'm just partying like everybody else. I'm 21, 25, and this is what we do, you know?
which just fuels that even more.
Well, especially too, I think like I can relate to that in a sense. When I look back now, because I told myself the same stuff, right? As everybody's doing. But when I look back now, like that was so far from the truth. I surrounded myself with people that were going to just co-sign what I wanted to do and how I wanted to act. And then when you go to jail, you get arrested. It's, oh man, you know, like people think it's cool. And then when I look back, I'm like, I was really just part of the wrong crowd for me. Like everybody on their own, we're all, you know, good folks, good people. But when we got together, we had the worst ideas of what we should be doing.
Yeah, that was well said. You hung around with people that co-signed you. I love that. That's so true. Like even when, you know, later on in life, when I went to rehab and I entered recovery, I started to see, oh, wait, like not everybody goes to a function and drinks, you know, like when I would start to go out and do things, I'm like, I'm at dinner and I'm looking at tables and I'm like, wait, not all these people have alcohol at their table. That's weird. Cause when I would go out before, I just assumed everybody had alcohol at their table, you know, and not the reality, you know, that was me rationalizing things.
Yeah, no, it's so true. And then, yeah, it's not how it all plays out. So, I mean, as you progress there too, you mentioned you had kids and like, how did that look? Was that in Missouri?
That was in Missouri. Yeah. I had two kids, not planned, with my ex-wife. We weren't married then, but then we ended up getting married and it was great. You know, I always wanted kids. I always wanted to be a good dad and the bar for me to be a better dad was low. So, you know, and when I'm talking about excuses or making myself feel better for the drinking I was doing, that bar was super low. So me having 8 to 10 beers a night was nothing in comparison to what my parents did, right? And I had a house and I had a job, so I was winning. You know, I was going to my kids' functions and all of the stuff that a seemingly good father would do. So, you know, it made me feel good about it. But ended up getting divorced. And well, when we got separated, I didn't have a home. I was staying at a friend's house and I would go in and out of hotels. So I had a place for my kids to stay at. And that was really one of the lowest points for my drinking. It was really a hard time because I had hit that lower bar that I had set for myself, you know, not having a place for my kids to be. I didn't have a room for them to stay in. And those things were really weighing on me. And back then, the decision-making was really poor, you know, driving with my kids in the car while I was drunk and definitely shouldn't have been behind the wheel. You know, those moments are things that really sat with me for a long time at the early stages of my recovery. I have a lot of regret for that. I'm thankful that nothing happened because any number of things could have went wrong back then, you know. Thankfully, they didn't, but that's something that I've held on to. I've talked about it with my kids. Like I said, I'm open. My kids have been a part of my recovery since the beginning, since the day I left to rehab. I've been open and honest with them. So, yeah.
Why is that something that's really important to you?
To be loud about my recovery?
Yeah, just to be honest with people, because I mean, just, you know, just sharing that and to be honest with your kids and stuff like that, right?
Yeah, it's important for me to be loud about it because I think the louder I am, the more chances what I'm saying can hit somebody that might be riding the fence on where they need to make a decision, you know? And I'm not here to push anybody one way or the other, you know? I'm here to tell my experiences, and if it helps somebody, then that's amazing. And if it just sits with somebody and resonates for a little bit, then that's cool too, you know? But from the jump, I wanted to be honest about it. I didn't want to have another thing that I was trying to like hide or shy away from. I had done that for so many years, right? And that had led me to a lot of poor decision-making. So when I made the decision to go to rehab, in that very moment, you know, I called my work, told my work that they could tell everybody that works there where I'm at because I was going to be gone for, you know, 30 plus days. I called all my family. I talked to my girlfriend. I told my kids where I was flying to, you know. It was super important. And plus the people that I had talked to in my life that had gone to recovery or gone to rehab had also given me the advice of you're going to get out of this process what you pour into it, you know. So for me, I wanted to pour myself into it because I didn't want to have to go back and forth to rehab and jump through all these hoops all over again. I wanted to be dedicated and try to get it as right as I could the first time, you know?
Yeah. So as things progressed there before leading up to the rehab stay that you hinted at there, I mean, how did things look, you know, from above for your life, right? I'm seeing the picture here. I mean, you're showing up to work, you're doing what needs to be done there. You know, this seems like a big transition too with the separation of your wife at the time. And, you know, now things are, they're rocky for you, right? That picture that you wanted to be as a father and how you wanted to show up is compromised a little bit by this move and stuff. And that's weighing on you. When stuff like this happened in your life, I mean, did you just drown it out even more and more with alcohol? Did you find yourself reaching more in that direction?
Yeah, so during the separation, definitely I just kept drowning things out and drinking heavier and heavier. It got really bad. I then ended up getting an apartment with my girlfriend, and things went back to that, I guess you can call it calmer stage of drinking, where it was just the, you know, 8 beers at home at night after work. Started to feel better about myself. I had a place. Now my kids were staying with me again. You know, the divorce was final. Everything was getting back to that normalcy that it was before, I guess you could say. But then the moodiness began to happen, right? Like I'd start to get really angry, and I would have a lot of anger lashing out. I was picking arguments with my girlfriend, constantly arguing. The day drinking began to get more frequent and less sporadic. You know, I'd have a day off and I'd want to wake up and have the excuse to start drinking. So I would drop the kids off at school and tell my girlfriend I was going to pick up breakfast for us. And it wasn't just to be the nice guy and get breakfast, right? It was to go to the place that has alcohol and will serve me a drink while I'm waiting for breakfast, you know? And that kind of progressed, and I started to be less and less happy, you know, and things got better. We got a house, and I had 2 other kids at this point, you know. Everything from an outside perspective should be great, but yet I couldn't allow any of that happiness in. I just kept finding reason after reason to drink and reason after reason to treat my girlfriend poorly and then feel bad about it the next day and say, oh, won't happen again, or it was only because I was drinking. And that cycle just kept going on and on for, you know, a few years for sure.
Yeah. Well, and how do you feel about yourself? You know, how's your mental health being impacted by this? How are you feeling? Are you even having a real chance to really get into the feelings, you know, throughout the cycle? Because from what it sounds like, this was an everyday thing for you, right? Drinking every day was part of it.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Drinking every day was a thing. I would tell myself, it's Monday, I'm not going to drink today. I'll wait till I hit the weekend. And then I'd have one minor thing happen in my day, whether it was I stubbed my toe to it was a bad day at work. And that would be my reason to drink, right? I don't think I focused too much on my mental health of it back then. Like, I didn't think really that the reason why I was drinking was because I was struggling with things. I was older at this point. In my head, I could be over all of those things, you know. Also, in those moments, I didn't think I was doing anything wrong. I blamed everybody else for the reason why I was upset. I thought I could do no wrong, right? So I didn't really focus on that. I did start go to counseling for a little bit. And back then, I thought I was doing counseling the right way. I was going in and, you know, I'd be hungover, but I'd be talking about things, talking about my childhood, and I'd come out of it thinking that I had a good session and that I was really taking care of myself. And when really I wasn't really opening up. I wasn't being honest with myself and how I was really feeling. I wasn't getting any of that off of my chest, you know? So in hindsight, no, I wasn't worried about my mental health. It was really just eating me up.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm with you on that too. I did get into counseling and in therapy, and I call it keeping the seat warm. I was keeping the seat warm for the next guy. It is really hard. I mean, even doing that and getting down, you know, getting to the real work is definitely, there's definitely a skill involved, I think. You know what I mean? A skill involved as you know, the therapist or counselor, but as well as us for like participants in the process. And it kind of comes back to what you mentioned there. You heard early on advice before you went to treatment. You're going to get out of this what you potentially put in. And it's an interesting story because we hear it so many times, right? We do these different, you know, maybe interventions or these different things, right? We try meetings or we try to talk to our doctor or we try to open up to friends. But I, in my story, like I did all that stuff to get people off my back. I wasn't actually personally really interested in making the changes. I was just trying to free up a little bit of space because I felt like they were on me. People were on me to make changes. And, and I found that, you know, this whole thing really for me didn't really work out until I was really interested in saving my own life. You know, everybody else wanted it to work out, of course, right? People who love us, it's devastating for them to see the damage. And I think for them, they can see it a lot more clearly than we can, you know, at times, right? Like we get wrapped up in it. And it sounds like from your story too, and I can relate with that, as we get wrapped up in it, it's really hard to see sort of everything that's going on or how damaging that this really is for our lives. So, I mean, what age would you range that you're at right now with the story?
Right now, I think I'm around the, you know, I'm about 40 years old at that point. That last stretch, I'm 45 now. I think I was 43 when I entered rehab. And that last stretch was a doozy. It really escalated. By the time I hit the pinnacle, that last day of my drinking, you know, my girlfriend was done with our relationship. In hindsight, I didn't know that. I didn't know that in that moment. Also, it wouldn't have surprised me with the way that I was acting and treating her. You know, it was a shitty way to treat somebody that you love. But the last 2 years for sure escalated. The day drinking, like I was saying, really escalated. And I would try to take a day off here and there to try to, like you said, create that space to get people off my back. But at that point, it wasn't really doing what I wanted it to do. I was never pressured. You know, my girlfriend never approached me and gave me an ultimatum or anything like that. It was something I would mention loosely. Oh, I'm going to try not to drink. And if I can't do it, then maybe I need help. And then, you know, I think those in those moments were just words coming out of my mouth, not really having any weight to them at all. That the last like couple months, I had a couple big moments with my drinking, embarrassing moments that had happened. And I had made a drive to Kansas City, which is like a 3-hour drive. And I, and both ways, I drank the whole way there and the whole way back. And that when I say it now, when it comes out of my mouth, that's like absurd. I can't even believe I did that, let alone and got away with it and nobody got hurt. That's just crazy to me that even happened. You know, I embarrassed myself at a wedding. It was a good buddy of mine's wedding and I was supposed to give a speech there and I totally bombed the whole thing. And all leading up to, you know, my final night drinking, which was started early in the day. It was the day that I could have spent with my girlfriend and my kids at Six Flags. And instead I chose to find a reason to be angry at her and the world and just drink all day. And I went really heavy into it and ended up at a bar. And at the end of the night, the bar was not wanting me to drive home. So they ended up getting me an Uber. And the Uber ended up taking me to the address that I had on my ID, which was my old address and not my house. So I got out of the car, told the Uber driver, this isn't where I live. And he refused to take me back to my house. And I passed out in the lawn, in the front lawn of my old apartment complex. And my girlfriend had to find me at 3 o'clock in the morning. Or, you know, she used my location to find me. And I remember her waking me up and me looking up at her. And even in that, you know, belligerent state, when I made eye contact with her, that was kind of the moment that I knew something had to change. I couldn't be 42 years old passing out in the front lawn somewhere, you know. Her having to tell the kids that she has to go find me and get me is just, you know, super embarrassing and not fair to anybody involved, really. So I woke up that next day. You know, she got me home. I slept in the car and woke up that next day and made the decision to go to rehab and told my son was the first person I told. I picked him up from football practice and told him, and he looked at me and put his hand on my back and was like, everything's going to be okay, Dad, you know, which was a really pivotal moment for me. He was 13 at the time. And sometimes I wonder if I should have even put that heaviness on him in that moment, being the first person I told, but he gave me exactly what I needed, you know, and let me know that it was going to be okay. And within 4 to 5 hours from that moment, I was on a plane flying out to California to go to rehab.
Wow. Thanks for sharing that, man. It's always interesting, the stories about the night before, You know, we make maybe, for sober people, maybe the biggest decision of our entire lives. We're the best
for sure.
Decision for our entire lives. I mean, what did you see there? So you made that eye contact. I mean, what did you see there? You know, I mean, was there a lot of pain? Was there sadness? Was there, you know, it seemed to really hit you, right? Even in that moment of drunkenness, per se.
Yeah, I think what I saw was a mix of like disappointed, like I had failed, you know, us, which was really heavy. One of the things that has come out of this whole process is in that moment when she looked at me, you know, she was done. That was her final moment, right? And then I wake up the next day and say, I'm going to rehab. And she has to take all of those emotions and she shelved them, you know, so she could be there to support me. And I wasn't aware of that in that moment. You know, I just selfishly thought, cool, I'm getting the support I need. I'm going to rehab. This is awesome, you know. But it wasn't until a while later that she let me know, like, she was done and her emotions were put on the shelf and she never got to process any of those because she had to switch straight to supporting me and my decision, you know, which is awesome for me, but that sounds selfish, right? Thanks for supporting me. But it was an important thing for me to hear, as heavy as it was too, because we got to revisit that and I needed to understand that. My early recovery was really rocky. I may have stopped drinking, but I was using a lot of my same anger and manipulation tactics and blame. I was trying to navigate through it and I wasn't doing well at all. So our relationship definitely took a strain early on when I got back from rehab. It was really tough.
Yeah. So are you guys still together?
We are. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah,
and we're better than ever. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Because the way you were mentioning it there, that she was done, I thought the next thing was that she was going to hang around for a bit and then break the news to you in rehab, Dave.
Yeah. Thankfully not. We actually revisit these conversations every once in a while just to see. And I was actually picking her brain the other day and asking her, like, if she thought, was the plan, like, get me back from rehab and then be like, okay, cool, you're good, like, I'm over, you know, and, luckily for me, she wasn't ready to throw in the towel because she saw that I did make a big decision. And so she wanted to see how it all played out. You know, I think, like I said, we had a lot of strain. We reached that moment again after rehab where it was like, what are we going to do? This is bad. We decided to go to counseling together. And that was huge. That helped us a lot. After I hit my first year of sobriety, a lot in me started to change too. Getting to that year was really difficult. Like I said, I just kept falling into the same patterns, even though I wasn't drinking. I still really had a lot of anger and I had to figure out all of that. I thought it took a long time for me to realize that this is my recovery, you know, and I was trying to want, especially her, to do my recovery for me or with me, you know what I mean? And that's not her responsibility, but it took me a long time to realize that, you know, it's not easy to admit that all of this weight is on your shoulders to fix yourself. You know what I mean? That it's a lot of work.
Yeah. Key word there, work, right? And it's also that interesting thing, and you might be able to relate to this or maybe not. But I think when we're struggling with that daily drinking and we're struggling with the battle of addiction and everything like that, it makes a lot of sense to us, I think, that if we remove the substance, hey, things are going to be gravy. We're going to be on the up and up. And what happened for me, and I think what happens for a lot of us, is that, okay, now we've just removed something that, you know, at one point in time, I hate to admit it, but it worked really well. You know, the alcohol, the drugs, it worked really well to keep things going. And then at some point it switches and it stops working and it starts causing more chaos and more pain and more hurt than maybe it's able to even provide the relief from. But it's that part, then we get rid of the substance, it's so raw, it's so real. It's like now the emotions, and there's nowhere to run necessarily from all this stuff, right? And you've got to face it head on. So you're getting to rehab like in the next day. I'm curious, right? Were you familiar with rehab? Did you look at this before? Because it seems like it was pretty quick. Or did you just reach out to the right person that they were able to set you up this to make this happen?
Well, luckily my insurance through work is amazing. They have an employee assistance program that really just took care of everything for me. But as I mentioned, I reached out to like my dad, my ex-wife's fiance, my nephew, people that I had known have gone through this process, because I wanted to know what I was walking into, you know. And collectively, they all said the same thing. You've made the decision for yourself. Now, what are you going to do about it? You know, what work are you going to put into it? You know, so I made the decision on the way there, you know, okay, I'm going to do this thing. I'm going to go all in. I'm not going to shy away from it. And I showed up that night, got checked in. They put me in detox. And when I woke up the next day, I walked into the group that they were having, and the counselor looked at me and he was like, well, you're in detox. You don't have to be in the group. And I told him, I said, no, I told myself that I'm going to go all in on this thing and I'm going to start today, you know. And I sat down in the first group right then and there and just dove in and was super open in that moment, super vulnerable, told my story, you know, and just kept opening up and listening. I mean, I was taking notes after notes, you know. It's funny, when you're taking those notes in that moment, I'm like, cool, I'm writing the manuscript that's going to help me when I get back home. Well, when you get back home, those notes don't really do everything that you want them to do in real life moments, you know. But I really poured into it, which I think was important to do.
Yeah, well, for sure, 110%. You know, because oftentimes, a lot of times, and you might have even seen it, this program, I don't know, people will get to rehab and then a couple of days in talk themselves out of even needing to be there, you know, even towards that. So you get in there and, I mean, you jump right in. And we hear this story a lot too, right? Because you went all in with the drinking, you went all in with that stuff. And, you know, a lot of us are all or nothing people. And you do this thing. And I mean, sometimes those are the best things, right? If we sit back, we think about it all and we just let time pass, you know, I think it's a good thing, man, to really get in there, you know, make this decision. And for it to happen fast, right? Because you can lose those windows. For people who want to get sober, it's really important that, you know, they move quick, or the support or whoever is helping them, when they say, hey, I'm ready to do it, it's got to be quick, because you hang out for a couple of days and our mind might change. And I'm sure probably throughout your story, you have those days where you're like, I'm not drinking today. And then, you know, things start to get going and the wheels get turning. And it's like that, you know, that can go out the window really quick. So you leave rehab and you come back to, you know, to the real world type thing, right? Rehab's incredible, by the way, for anybody who is interested in checking out. It's a good place to remove you from a lot of the stress and the day-to-day grind of life and put you in a safe place with people with a ton of experience and other people that are going through all of this. What a lot of people realize on the other end of 30 days, it seems like a long time at the beginning, right? 30 days, my goodness, but it flies by and it's really not that long. And you come out the other end and, you know, your life's waiting for you, you know, for most of us, right? I remember getting out of rehab and I went to South Florida, you know, this was my second or third time in rehab. And I was like, you know, this is going to be great. At the time I was in a really bad spot and I was, you know, living on my brother's floor in his apartment and I didn't have any belongings or, you know, anything, no job, nothing. And I felt really good walking out of rehab, you know, here's my shot, man, to really do something with my life. And then I just remember, you know, opening up the door and the loneliness kicks back in, the sadness kicks back in. And I was, you know, right back to where I was before, sober. And then now all the other pieces of the puzzle start coming. What was that experience like for you? You know, I mean, after your 30 days.
Yeah, that was, you know, I'm coming back home. I'm like, oh, cool. I get to go back home. You know, I did this 30 days. I have my notebook. I feel great about it. I really did a lot of learning. And you come back and you realize you're the one that changed, right? Like, you're the one that started to change and everything else around you stayed the same, you know? So it's like a huge reality check. Okay, wait, like, now I'm actually around real time emotions that are popping up. Like, the kids are acting crazy and now I'm getting sort of stressed out about it. And this is where I would normally turn to a drink because I've had a stressful day. You know what I mean? So you're trying to navigate all that and figure it all out in real time. And it's happening really fast, you know. I had to learn to vocalize when I was having a craving, when I had them. I had to say it out loud, had to really rely on my honesty with myself to try to get through those moments. You know, I'd be at work and I'd pull somebody aside and be like, hey, I'm having a craving to have a drink tonight. I don't think I'm going to do it, but I'm just letting you know. You know, I had to be really, really vocal about it, which, and, you know, was good that I was vocal and upfront about me going to rehab in the first place because it made it easier. I didn't have to start this awkward conversation with somebody they already knew. In the same breath, I feel like I had eyes on me all the time too. Is this guy going to snap today? Is he going to break today? Which also brought on another set of pressure, right? But it happens really fast. So I had to find a way to try to slow things down. And for that, I just started waking up really early in the morning and being able to have time to myself. Wake up before anybody gets up, and I just get to have that moment of quiet to myself, you know. Also, early on, I was going to AA meetings because when I was in rehab, we were going to meetings 5 days a week, and I didn't really know that there was any other way to recover. So I was going to AA meetings pretty consistently for the first 3 months, like every day, but it just really wasn't for me. It wasn't sinking in for me. I like going and being in a room with people that could understand what I was going through, right? Like that part was cool, or hearing stories from people, which was cool. But I knew I had to find something else because it wasn't resonating with me. I started going back to counseling, and that really started to help. And I started getting on various different sober apps and, you know, saying my story and stuff. And from there, I started sharing on Instagram, and then it was like a snowball, you know, like I shared my story once, and then I'm hearing from people that are like, hey, that story sits with me, or yeah, I recover the same way. And then I started to realize, wait a minute, there's like a whole group of people out here that have their own way of recovery. They have their own process on how that they're doing this thing. And it was really eye-opening to me. You know, I was like, wow, I don't have to do this in the cookie cutter version. I can make this Dave's recovery and really do it how I want to do it, you know? Because at the end of the day, there's one rule, and that's don't use or don't drink, right? And how I'm doing that is up to me.
Yeah, no, that's beautiful. Yeah, to offer some flexibility in what you can connect with, right? Because that's the thing, is we got to stick around and we got to find some other people that we can connect with and you know, be part of something a little bit bigger than us, right? Sounds like you found exactly that. And I'm thinking about this. I have this, a lot of people come up with this, and maybe you have something similar, right? It's, hey, you know, my life is, you know, I'm in a rough spot. I need help. I need some help with how to get sober. And then you could mention, hey, why don't, you know, maybe look at options for rehab. No, I can't go to rehab. I've got my job and I don't want anybody to know that I've got this problem and I've got kids. And, you know, I get it. There's a lot of people have a lot of stuff going on. I mean, what are your thoughts on that, right? Because my thoughts, just to fast forward a little bit, is, you know, if you go to rehab for 30 days, yeah, of course you got all that stuff, but I'm really curious to see how your employer handled it. And I'm really curious to see if you had those thoughts and how you worked through it. Because I know there are situations, obviously, Dave, out there where people cannot just up and leave for 30 days. I get that. There's probably those situations. But I think as well, there's probably people out there who just make that excuse, you know, just be a straight shooter with it, make that excuse about what you can't do. We don't want to let the cat out of the bag type thing. And I'm really enjoying the aspect of your story about you getting honest with people and getting honest with yourself about, hey, where this thing has taken me in the journey that I'm on now. What are your thoughts on that, though, about all the excuses about not getting help?
Yeah, I mean, The biggest thing for me is I don't think that society as a whole makes it easy for somebody to say or do, right? So much shame comes with it. I mean, even the label alcoholic, right? You hear the word alcoholic and you start to think about things you've seen in a movie, or you think of the homeless person laying on a railroad track with a brown bag in their hand, right? I think society's role in that has made it really difficult for people to be open and honest about it. You know, I can understand not wanting to go to rehab. That's a huge step and seems like something that's so daunting. But in the grand scheme of things, what's 30 days if it can change the rest of your life, right? That's just 30 days. And it's changed so much in my life. I've never felt better. It's the best decision I've ever made. You know, you got to be able to get beyond that fear. And once you can get past that initial fear, you can find the beauty that's beyond that, you know? Did that kind of answer the question?
Yeah, no, that's great. Yeah. I think that's what it is. I think for a lot of times, and I'm only guessing here, but I think for a lot of times, there's a lot more behind. I think there's that surface level stuff, well, I can't. But there's all then behind that, another layer to that is fear. Fear is holding us back of the unknown, right? What to expect? What is it going to be like? Hey, I'm going to, you know, have to hopefully move on from this substance that's been a part of my life for X amount of years. And it's very scary, the unknown. I even look back at my journey, and as destructive as it was really comfortable. I knew what to expect day in and day out, like for the most part. I mean, there were wrenches thrown in the tire every now and then where I was like, oh, okay, well, that wasn't really part of the plan. But I think that I got comfortable with sort of living in the sadness and living in blaming everybody else and living in, you know, the pity parties and just being like, poor me, I'll never figure it out. And, you know, help me, and not really accepting help. I just found comfort in that. And it was a very scary place to be because I wasn't striving for anything different for a long time. But I think, yeah, sure. What you said there is so powerful. For you, it was the best decision you made. And at the end of the day, I mean, 30 days just really isn't much, especially if it's going to provide you the freedom on the other side to really get things together. What was it like with your employer when you mentioned to, you know, to them, right? Because that's another thing people are really worried about, going into treatment, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I'm super lucky that in all areas of my life, I had a ton of support. The second that I called my job, they were immediately like, yeah, do whatever you have to do. My job was going to be there when I got back. The store I work at as a whole has all supported every bit of my journey. You know, I'm super, super thankful for all the support that I've had. You know, when you go into rehab in the beginning, I'm hearing stories from people that don't have the support or don't have the insurance and don't have the job backing them. And I almost felt guilty at times talking about that aspect of my story because I had so much support behind me. You know, I understand not everybody has that, but there's other support out there too, right? Like I've also found support in strangers. You know what I mean? Like I follow you all the time and I find your messages supportive. You know what I mean? Like there's a ton of support out there, even if it's not the person right next to you. You just have to find a way to apply that to you. You know, jobs, I mean, we could go on about jobs. That's probably a whole bigger topic. Like I think jobs should just provide that. If somebody needs that assistance and is willing to go, I think, you know, that society as a whole needs to make it easier for people to go to rehab and get help that they need. It's hard. Like here in Missouri, I don't even think there's more than 2 rehab facilities that people can go to. It's just not here, but there's bars everywhere, right?
Yeah. You know, that's interesting how that plays out. Yeah. Well, Dave, incredible, man. So you got sober on August 12th, 2022.
Yeah.
You know, it's really, I think, an important message to you share about that first year. You know, the first year is a tough one to get through, but not that any of them are easier. But, you know, I think 2 things are at play. The further we get, a little bit stronger, more tools. And there is probably the element of things get more comfortable and we really grow into, you know, just this sober lifestyle. And that's like the way that we live. But that first year is really tough. So well done on all of it. And I really appreciated you jumping in here and sharing. I'm just wondering before we sign off, is there anything else you want to mention to, you know, maybe bring us up to present day?
Yeah, the first thing I want to touch on is we were just talking about how people are saying that they can't and they can't. And if you're listening out there, I just want to sit here and tell you that you can. I know it seems like I'm just a guy spouting words, but I promise you, you can. That's the first message I want to say. The other thing is, today's life, today's Dave, is living in a dream world. You know, it is all of the things that I said that I wanted to be. You know, I'm a better father, I'm a better partner, I'm a better employee at my job, I'm healthier, I'm fitter. All the things that I wanted to do are being executed today, and it's made me the happiest that I've ever been, and I'm able to allow myself to accept the happiness and know that I'm worth it. So it's been a ride, but it's been so worth it.
Yeah. What's one thing too, I'm really curious, that you've learned about yourself throughout all of this?
That I'm limitless. There's no limit to what I can do if I apply myself. I'm stronger than I ever thought I was. And I don't mean that in strength. I mean that like in my mind. I've learned that I sold myself short for 20 plus years and didn't give myself enough credit. And Now I know that anything that I want to set out to do, I can accomplish it.
Beautiful, man. A powerhouse, Dave. I love that. It's so interesting, right? Because sobriety seems to provide everything we were trying to find in the bottle, yeah, or in the addiction. It provides the true freedom of not having to wake up and our first thought being our next drink or our next drug or how we're going to make this happen. And it frees up a lot of time that we can put that effort into other things. And the confidence for people who get sober just seems to explode. It takes a little bit of time, but it really seems to explode.
Yeah, I feel like time is like flowed down so much. I've never had so much time on my hand. You know what I mean? Like now I know what it's like to have a day off when I have a day off. Like, wow. Like I felt like I had hours of just not doing anything. It's crazy how fast things were moving when I was drinking. Super light speed.
Yeah. Does it ever surprise you that this is how you're living now?
Yeah. Yeah. It's a good surprise. You know, sometimes I like to just look around or have a moment where I just watch my kids from afar and I'm just like, dang. You know, it's like in a movie as like the camera's panning back or something like that. I'm just sitting there looking, wow, this thing is happening. You know, like it's happening right now and it's happening because of me and the people around me that support me, obviously. But at the end of the day, you know, I did the work for this and I feel like I've earned it and I try to absorb every ounce of it that I can.
Beautiful, man. Well, thank you again, Dave.
Thank you. Thank you, Brad.